My name's Alex Barthet. I am a board-certified construction lawyer. I've been doing this for about 25 years. I manage a law firm of about 13 lawyers, and all we do is construction. We don't do anything else. Our clients are only construction companies of one form or another. So I spent a lot of time talking about contracts, liens, waivers, and this would be a useful exercise for you all. So I wanted to start with the basics, which so we all understand what the purpose of the lien law is, why it's there, and how it affects you as a property owner, so that you can understand, you know, why you're getting these notices, what is a lien, how does it affect the project, what do you need to do when you get one. So a lien is an encumbrance on the property. That means that someone that improves your property has the right to put a lien on the property. And if they go through the legal process with the lien, they can ultimately sell the property out from under you, and they would be entitled to recover the amount that they're owed out of any equity that's in the property. So the intent is that, you know, if someone improves your property, they should be entitled to some security right, and this lien is that security right. So as part of that, the legislature created this whole scheme of notices so that you as an owner can protect yourself. So one of the first things that you will see when someone has or intends to put a lien on your property or is trying to preserve that right is you're going to get a notice to owner. So this is a document that you probably see on a regular basis. It is a document that is intended to alert you to the existence that someone is on your project, that if they remain unpaid, they could put a lien on the property. So what should you do when you get this notice? The first thing you should do is you should be making a list of all of the notices you get by project. And the reason you want to do this is because we're going to talk about it a little bit later, which is the release. The release is going to be the key to protect you as an owner to make sure that someone doesn't show up later and say, wait a second, I haven't been paid, therefore now I need to put a lien on your property. So you're going to get these notice to owners. Anyone that does not have a direct contract with you needs to serve this notice to owner no later than 45 days from their first work on the project. So let me explain what that means. If I am a plumber and I'm working for the general contractor who has a contract with you, I need to serve my notice to owner on you as the owner no later than 45 days from when I start working on the job. That's the last date that I can serve this notice. I can serve it before. So maybe 4 months ago, I signed a contract with the GC. I can send my notice then. So now you get this notice. So you're going to get them from all of the subs, from all of the subcontractors, and from all of the suppliers and rental companies from that may have a contract with the sub, the sub-sub, or the GC. So on a big project, you could get a dozen, two dozen, three dozen notice to owners, and they don't all come right at the beginning of the job. If I'm the painter, for example, you know, the whole building has to go up first, and then I show up, that's when I'm going to send my notice, right? So you're going to be getting them during the course of the project. So what you should do when you get this notice is not ignore it. That's rule number one. You got to do something with it. And what you're going to do is you're going to take this notice and you're going to make a chart. And in that chart, you're going to list who the notice came from and who asked them to do the work. And the reason this is important is because if I'm the plumber, I'm going to send you a notice and I'm going to say that I, plumber, was asked to do work on this project by the contractor. But maybe my supplier who sends you a notice is going to say, I, supplier, I'm sending you this notice because the plumber asked me to do work on the job. both of those people are going to be listed on the notice to owner. You're going to see at the bottom, it's going to say, this is who sent it to you. And in the document, it's going to tell you who ordered them to do work. So you want to keep a little Excel chart of who sent the notice and who asked them to do the work. The reason that this is really important is because when we get time to issue payment to the contractor, you need to make sure you get releases from everybody. Everybody. So anyone that sent a notice on the job, you need to get a release from them, even if they are not due money that period. This is probably the most important part of this entire presentation, is to understand that every month, no matter what, anyone that has sent you a notice to owner, you need a release from them. And the reason is really simple. If I'm the supplier to the plumber, how do you know that I sent materials this month or last month or next month? You don't, right? So if you only rely on the contractor who says, no, don't worry, the supplier never delivered materials this month, but in fact, maybe he did, then you could run the risk that you pay the contractor doesn't give you a release, or you don't get a release from the supplier to the plumber, and now the supplier to the plumber puts a lien on the job. So imagine a scenario where you are not collecting these releases, and the contractor, who is doing everything right, pays the subcontractors, but the subcontractor doesn't pay the supplier. Well, if you don't get a release from that supplier, then that supplier, even though you have paid the contractor, can still put a lien on your property. And this is the most powerful part of the lien law, which is a lienor who follows the lien law can put a lien on your property even if you have made the payment that should have gone to them to the contractor, right? So you've paid the contractor what should have gone to the supplier, but it never made its way to the supplier. That supplier can put a lien on your property. And it is not a legal defense to say, well, wait a second, I paid the contractor. The only way that you can protect yourself is to make sure you get releases from everybody. So if the supplier gave a release or you received a release from the supplier, then they're out of luck. So if they decided to give a release before they got the money, well, then they've given up that right, even though they didn't get the money. We could have a whole nother discussion about what the releases look like, whether they're conditional or unconditional. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But that is why understanding who's on your job, organizing those notice to owners by job, and then making sure you get releases from all of those folks every time you pay is absolutely critical. Okay, so let's talk about who has lien rights. A general contractor has lien rights on your property. A subcontractor to the general contractor has lien rights. A subcontractor. So let's say I'm a mechanical contractor and I hire a ductwork subcontractor. That ductwork subcontractor has lien rights. A subcontractor does not have lien rights. So if, in my example, if the subcontractor ductwork subcontractor hires another subcontractor, that third tier subcontractor has no lien rights, okay? On the material side, a material supplier that delivers product to the owner, to the contractor, to the subcontractor, and to the sub-subcontractor has lien rights. But a material supplier to another material supplier does not have lien rights. Architects, engineers, landscape architects, and land surveyors, those four groups of professionals, have professional services liens. And none of them need to serve a notice to owner. So they may have lien rights on your property, and they do not need to send you a notice to owner to preserve that lien right. So we talked about the first rule, the first timing rule, which is Everyone that needs to serve a notice to owner has to do it no later than 45 days from your first work, from their first work on the job. They can do it sooner, but they can't do it later. So for example, let's take a common scenario. I'm the contractor, I hire the electrician, and the electrician's not gonna start for 3 months. But I've got the contract, I wanted to buy him out, so we signed the contract. The electrician sends you a notice to owner. Now the electrician's not on site and won't be for 3 months, but you have that notice to owner. When you pay the contractor, you still need to get a release from the electrician. And even if the contractor tells you, wait, it doesn't matter, he's not there, he hasn't been on the job site, you say, it doesn't matter, I have a notice, and anyone that sent me a notice, I need to get a release from them every month. The only exception to that is if by some chance you get someone to give you a final release. So if someone gives you a final release, you don't need to get releases from them after that. But that's pretty rare that we see that. But that would be one exception. So we talked about the 45 days. The next timing rule is 90 days from my last work as a supplier or a subcontractor or the contractor. That's the deadline that I have to record my lien. I need to record a lien no later than 90 days from my last work. That last work does not include punch list or warranty work. So if I'm out there and I'm doing real work under an approved change order or under my base contract as the electrician, and let's say my last work is today, tomorrow is day one of the 90 days. That clock is now starting to count. Let's say 2 weeks from now, I show up and I do some punch list or some repair work. Some of the lamps weren't working, so I went and I replaced them. That's not going to extend the time to reset my 90 days. Again, warranty work, repair work, punch list work does not change the 90-day period. So we have a lot of tools that I'm happy to send you all to help you with all of this. So one of them is a lien and notice calculator. It's called the CalcuLien. So if you go to CalcuLien.com and put in your address, we'll send one of these to you in the mail. It has this period here. So it's 45 days on this side, the notice to owner, and then 90 days on this side for the lien. So you just line it up to when first work is, and then it'll tell you when the notice to owner should have been due. And the same thing for the lien or notice of non-payment, which would be a claim on the contractor's bond. So great to have it on your desk because, you know, someone comes to you and says, hey, you know, their notice is no good. You can calculate it right away. Okay, so we talked about a lien. A lien is a document that is prepared by the lienor, signed under oath and notarized. It has certain information, who hired them, the name of the project, how much they're owed, when they did work, beginning and ending, and it gets recorded in the public record of the county where the project is located, and at the same time, it gets served upon all interested parties, which would be you as the owner, the contractor, pretty much anyone that's listed in the notice of commencement. That is a lien. That is the encumbrance on your property. A notice of non-payment is another statutory notice, and that is what's used when the project has a bond. So we talked about a situation where you hire a contractor and that contractor gets a payment and performance bond. If I'm the plumber and I want to make a claim on the contractor's bond because I am owed money at the end of the job, what I do is I prepare a notice of non-payment. It is a document that is signed and notarized under oath. It has much of the same information as a lien, but not exactly. It has slightly different information. It's a different form. And That does not get recorded in the public record. It just gets served on everyone, meaning mailed by certified mail on everybody. So you're going to get a notice of non-payment in the mail if someone is intending to make a claim on the general contractor's payment bond. Again, that notice of non-payment is not recorded in the public record. It is not a cloud on the title of the property. No one can foreclose on your property because you get one. So what does that mean if you get one? I would say you should say to the contractor, hey, contractor, we got this, you know, what's your take? What, you know, do you owe them the money? How are you going to resolve this? But understand, it has no legal effect on you as the owner. That's why you got the bond. That's why you bought the bond, so that you wouldn't have to worry about people putting a lien on your property. A notice of non-payment for people that are not construction lawyers have two meanings. One meaning is the one I told you. It's the statutory document. You find it right in chapter 713. It's signed, it's notarized, and it has a legal effect of being the claim on the contractor's payment bond. There's another type of notice of non-payment, which I would say is what you kind of understand the name to be. This is my notice to you that I have not been paid, okay? So that is not a legal document. It's just a notice. It's just, hey, I want to let you know that someone owes me money. Again, if you're getting something like that and it's not notarized, it's titled notice of non-payment because they want to make sure you understand that it's a notice from them that they haven't been paid. Again, it's just letting you know that someone claims, right or wrong, by the way, that they think they're owed money. Again, no legal significance to that notice. If I got one, I would go to the contractor and say, hey, what's this? You know, are you going to take care of it? Now, keep in mind, if you are on top of your notice chart, your notice to owner chart, and your releases every month, the most exposure you could ever have is 1 month worth of unpaid bills. Because think about it, if you're getting releases every month, then the only amount of money someone could ever be owed is 1 month's worth of unpaid bills. So your exposure should be pretty insignificant. Let's talk about the last big date. So we talked about the 45 for the notice to owner, the 90 days for the lien, or the notice of non-payment if someone's going to make a claim on the contractor's bond, still 90 days. The last date is that someone has to enforce their lien is 1 year from the recording date of the claim of lien. They have to file a lawsuit to foreclose on the lien. So let me explain what that means. Take the example again, I'm the plumber. I've done work on the project. I claim that I haven't been paid. I timely served my notice to owner. I've timely recorded my lien. I now need to file a lawsuit in circuit court to enforce my lien no later than 1 year from the date that that lien is recorded. That is the outsidemost date that I have to file my lawsuit. I could do it right away. I could sue to foreclose on the lien the day after I sent it to recording. I don't have to wait a year, but I can't wait more than a year. So if you get a lien, you just need to be aware that that is the time frame that someone has to file a lawsuit. Now, if you have a lien and you look at it and you're like, wow, this lien is 16 months old. No one's done anything with it. I never got a release. It has no legal effect anymore. It stays in the public record because everything gets recorded and it stays there. Nothing ever gets unrecorded. So it's always there. But if it is not enforced within the 1 year period, then it can no longer be enforced legally. There is no such thing as re-recording the lien. I hear this sometimes, right? Oh, my year's coming up. Let me go and record another copy of the same lien. That's not a thing. What that does is the first lien is no longer valid because it's been more than a year. And that second lien is now a fraudulent lien on your property because you can't do that. That's just like putting a lien on for no reason. The only way they can keep that lien alive beyond the 1 year is to file that lawsuit that I mentioned. So that is the deadline that they have. They got to file the lawsuit no later than 1 year from the recording date of the claim of lien. Now, there are ways for you as an owner to shorten that time. There are two ways in particular. One is called a notice of contest of lien. So let's say I'm the plumber, I've recorded a lien on your property, and you say, you know, we don't want the lien to stay there for a year. We want to force you to have to deal with it. We want to get it off the property sooner. So you can take a document called a notice of contest of lien. You prepare it. You bring it to the clerk, you pay a small filing fee, the clerk will stamp it, record it, and mail it via certified mail to the lienor. So you as the owner, you prepare this paperwork, I get it now in the mail. From the time the clerk stamps it, not the day I receive it, when they stamp it, and it'll have the stamp on it, I now have 60 days to file my lawsuit to foreclose on the lien. So you have now reduced the 1 year to 60 days. It doesn't mean the lien goes away automatically. It just means that now, instead of waiting up to a year to file my lawsuit, I have 60 days. The reason this works sometimes is because recording a lien is very inexpensive. You could do it yourself. You know, some lienors can do it themselves. You get the form right online and you pay a filing fee. And now for very little time and effort, and expense, I have now encumbered your property. I've created a problem for you, and I've spent an hour of time and a $20 recording fee, right? If I want to make your life difficult because I think I'm owed money, I can do that. I can also hire a lien or notice service. They'll do it for about $400, right? So it's not an expensive thing for someone to do. Hiring a lawyer and foreclosing on a lien, that's a whole nother ball game, right? If they went to a lawyer, most lawyers are going to charge them hourly. They're going to want a retainer. So now we go from a few hundred bucks to many thousands of dollars for them to enforce their right. Well, maybe you can call their bluff and say, well, I see you put the lien on because that's easy, but I don't think you're going to spend the time and effort to file a lawsuit, especially because maybe you determined, hey, their notice to owner was no good. It was late. The lien was recorded on day 95 and not on day 90, right? So maybe there's a defect in the lien and you don't want to spend the money to file your own lawsuit to remove the lien. You just want to make it go away in 60 days because you don't think the other side's going to do anything about it. So those are some of the reasons you may want to use this 60-day notice of contest of lien. Again, it's very simple. It's prepare a form. You take it to the clerk and record it, pay a filing fee. And then in 60 days, if they don't file a lawsuit, the lien is no longer encumbering the property. Sometimes 60 days is too long. There's a faster way to do it, which is called a 20-day summons to show cause, which is now instead of 60 days for them to file a lawsuit, it's 20 days. But this is a much more complicated process. You need to have a lawyer. You need to file a lawsuit against the lienor. You have to pay the filing fee, serve it upon them. So it's much less of a self-help tool. You'll have to use a lawyer to do it, to reduce it to 20 days. Just know that it exists if you needed to do something faster than 60 days. Again, it doesn't automatically remove the lien. It just forces them to have to bring their own claim within 20 days of the day you serve them with this 20-day summons. We have this other tool called the Lien-O-Matic, so you can get one too if you want. What this one does is you open up the chart here, and you find the type of project you are. So you guys are always going to be in this first chart, which is private projects, right? Because you're a private entity. And you want to know, like, what are the rules that a subcontractor needs to follow in order to record their lien? So what you do is you pull down this piece of paper, and then the, let me see, the arrow lines up, right? So you find, is it in there somewhere? There, right? And then down here at the bottom, it says all the things that that person needs to do in order to record their lien or preserve their rights. So you may say, oh, wait a second, they're a supplier to a sub-sub, but they didn't timely record their lien because they have to do it in this number of days. So this is, again, a good tool to have in case you forget all the wonderful things that we talked about today. It's right there on your desk, and you can go ahead and double check to make sure that everything that they needed to do, they did. And if not, you can tell them that why they're wrong and that their lien is no good. So conditional versus unconditional releases. A conditional release is a release that is expressly conditioned on me as the person giving the release having received the money. So what I would do on a conditional release is I will add language that will say, this release is conditioned upon receipt of $28,000 in paid funds. And then I put that on the release, or maybe it's typed in the release, and I hand it to you, or hand it to the electrician who hands it to the contractor who hands it to you. And that release is no good until I get that $28,000. If you paid my $28,000 to the contractor and the contractor didn't pay it to the electrician, my release is worthless. It's as if I never gave you a release. If you paid the $28,000 to the contractor who paid it to the electrician, but the electrician still didn't pay me, again, the release is worthless. So you need to be sure that you are getting only conditional releases for the current period. So if you're paying a contractor $100,000 for this month and $100,000, and he was paid $100,000 the prior month, okay, what you need to make sure is that when you hand him his $100,000 check this month, that the releases that you receive, don't forget, you have now your chart, right? You know everybody that's supposed to be giving you a release every month, no matter what, whether they delivered product or they did work on the project or not, you're going to get a release from them. You need to make sure that the conditional releases that you're getting for the current period are only for the current period, and that at the same time, you're getting unconditional releases for the prior period. So if we're in March, you're paying March now, that means when they hand you the, or I guess it's February now, so they're handing you their February pay recs and release packages. You need to make sure that everybody that you have a notice to owner from has given you an unconditional release at least through January. If you don't have unconditional releases through January from somebody, then you run the risk that they may not have been paid and they may have delivered product and you may be at risk for getting a lien. The related point to this is $10 releases, right? So sometimes you see that the release says $10 or maybe it says $28,000. You as the recipient of the release, it doesn't really matter. Like if it says $10, but the language in the release is fine. And again, you have form release language in your contracts. So, you know, you need to make sure that that release says what it says per the contract and that you're getting that. If it says $10 from the electrician or the supply house, the reason it doesn't matter is because as compared to the amount of money or the through date of the release, what controls is the through date. So as long as the through date of the release, that is the date that the release is effective through, is correct, then as long as it says some amount of money, $10, $100, $28,000, it doesn't really matter legally. If you got other questions, let me know. Otherwise, have a great weekend, everybody.